Brett Thomas here. I'm here on the phone with Beena Sharma. Hello, Beena.
Hi, Brett. How are you?
I'm great. I'm just so excited to catch up with you and hear about some of your more recent adventures out there on the front lines of integral organizational development. And for those of you listening, many of you are already familiar with Beena's work. If you're not, Beena has been doing individual and organizational development for 20 years. I met Beena at Integral Institute many years ago. We've worked together, taught workshops and seminars, and she specializes in ego development and polarity management and does a lot of work internationally. And she's one of the folks I think of when I, as I said a moment ago, when I think of the people who are really out there on the front lines of integrally informed leader and organizational development. Beena, I'm really looking forward to hearing more about the work you're doing these days.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thanks so much. Well, thanks so much, first of all, for having me on the call. It's very exciting what you're putting together as the Integral Leadership Collaborator, and I'm looking forward to being in touch more with other practitioners and other people who want to do more of the kind of work that you and I are doing. So I really appreciate the opportunity.
Pleasure.
What I'm finding most exciting is continuing to do individual and organizational development and really deepening the work using what I call integrating methodologies. And integral is a very comprehensive framework that I now can't help but use in the work that I do. And having done a little bit deeper work in several related methodologies like holacracy, working with polarities, specifically ego development, and building on my background in large-scale change, it's very exciting for me to see how best I can integrate these different systemic practices, use an integral lens, and really do work that is more fulfilling, more satisfying, more productive, and where clients feel that they really are getting something that makes sense, is comprehensive, is deeper, higher, and energizes them.
What would you say, I really appreciate that, and it kind of, a question kind of arose for me, for many of our listeners who are students of integral theory, fascinated by it, perhaps use it in one way or another. You know, but for those of us that are out there really providing, you know, explicitly integrally informed organizational development and individual development, employee development programs and all these things, how would you describe the difference between what, you know, you did, you know, over a decade ago before you got into Integral and all of our colleagues in, say, just, shall we say, conventional organizational development and individual employee development programs, how would you describe what you do differently now that you are integrally informed and you really bake that in and it informs pretty much everything that you do? And like you said, you can't help but use it now that you know it. What's different? And how, when you talk to a client, I'm guessing you don't go in there and go, hey, I want to sell you some quadrants, levels, lines, states, and types. I doubt if you lead with that because we tried that and it doesn't work. but yet, everything you do is integrally informed in knowing about your work. So how do you? What's different, and how do you approach the clients? And do they sense that there's a difference between what you're doing versus what conventional OD practitioners are doing? And is it a felt sense, or is it because you're talking about, you know, in a more explicit sense, quadrants, levels, lines, states, and types?
Well, that's a great question, and actually there are many questions within the one question
you asked me.
I think what's different is the implicit and explicit frame. So when we're working with whatever we do, we're always using frames, right? So the frames that I was using earlier were limited to the practices and methodologies that I had learned and the frames that I had to interpret my own learning through my experiences with my clients. So what's different now is that both those frames are more expanded. I have many more perspectives, many more lenses through which to look at what I'm going to offer the client, to look at the client context, and then to observe and interpret how I am making meaning out of the experiences with my clients. So that's a big difference. From another point of view, there's not a big difference because I think my attempt even when I was working earlier was to be more integral, even though I hadn't defined it in ways that the theory defines it, and was always looking to see what's missing, what do I need to include, how can I make this broader, how can I support my clients in more ways than I'm supporting. So the intent was integral, but I was lacking a more descriptive, informed framework. The other big thing for me is that having understood more about how individual ego development occurs, I have become more aware of my own development. And it's amazing for me, the more I coach using the ego development framework, the more I score, the more I understand the theory, the more I am realizing it's impacting my own development. So I mean, if there's one big thing for me, it is really how my understanding of integral has supported my evolution. And so a small shift in me makes a big shift in the work that I do with my clients. So I don't know, does that answer fully what you were asking? There was some other question you asked in between.
That's very rich. Thank you. I spoke with Jeff about that recently in another recording about having that broader perspective. And so the other kind of thing I was curious about too, and I know we're going to talk in a few minutes about specific examples of clients you're working with and how you approach them and how you help them solve their problems in an integrally informed way. And that other kind of sub-question in there was, how do you talk with clients about integral? How do you approach being an integral organizational development consultant as opposed to, say, a conventional organizational development consultant? Like, how do you approach that with clients? And then the other part of that is, how do they experience it? Do they have a felt sense that, wow, there's something going on here that is not going on when I deal with folks that are not integral? What's your experience with that over the last 7 or 8 years?
Yes, another really good question. I realize, and a lot of this is not conscious a lot of the time, but it is conscious some of the time. I realize that I may be anywhere on the spectrum of completely implicit and almost invisible, invisibly using integral, to all the way to the other end of the spectrum where it's explicit. I'm actually teaching it. I'm actually helping the internal group that is co-designing with me, helping them be more integral, understand the framework, and take it to other areas of their work beyond even the project. So it could range from one end to the other depending upon the context. As far as specifically ego development goes, I am learning more and more that it's much better to be more implicit about it than explicit because of all the assumptions and flags that, it raises, unless I'm working with an internal group that is responsible for the development of employees like the HR group or the senior leadership group. And then I actually make a judgment call, and then I will make it more explicit. I will talk a little bit about why it's important to have that lens and that perspective and understand the framework and the model without being limited by it in some ways. So, I don't have a real answer to how do I talk about it, but what I typically do is work with the context. So if I'm seeing something that's very obviously missing, and if the four quadrants seem to be a great way of including what's missing, then I'll use the four quadrants. If I see that, that's not, probably the most useful at that time, I might introduce maturity as a concept if they're really talking about taking the leadership to the next level. If I'm seeing that's not, you know, the best thing to surface at this time, but I'm seeing that they are dealing with some organizational polarities and they're experiencing some pain areas because they're privileging one pole of a polarity, then I might bring up, you know, the concept of the polarity and then suggest that if they quote-unquote integrate those two poles, they can be more integral, and then that becomes the avenue to talk about integral in a, you know, larger description and theory. I have been very lucky that almost all the clients that I've been working with for the past 3.5 or 4 years are already very integrally informed. I mean, I'm truly blessed working with organizations that get it, that know Ken's work, that are familiar with the model, and I want to work with a consultant that can help them deepen it in their own understanding. So it's been very easy for me in some ways to talk about integral. So in the last 3 years, I've mostly been more explicit than implicit, except for the ego development measurement work. And how does it land with them? I think they can tell the difference because, again, the clients that I'm working with are working with a lot of other consultants, and they continue to do that for specific areas. But when they work with me, I think they feel that they are addressing some areas or some ways in which they just cannot get from other consultants who are focused on specific practices. And I think me particularly, because I bring more than one practice, so it's not that I go in and I'm just working with integral, or it's not that I go in and I'm just working with polarities, or it's not that I'm going in and I'm a holacracy practitioner, and that's what I offer. But I integrate all of these in various ways. So I think people begin to see that if I'm going in a particular direction with them and there seems to be something that's surfacing that actually needs a different lens and I'm able to bring that lens appropriately, then I think the way it lands is they feel they're getting a comprehensive and a more integrated approach. And I think what it helps them do is integrate these different terminologies, theories, and practices in their own minds, and they're able to see their context from the different angles that these methodologies provide. Whereas I think with other consultants, they pretty much get one or two lenses. So I think, again, I think I'm just blessed to work with people that already know what I'm offering.
I think so. I think that it, you know, that's a joy when you have that opportunity. And I really appreciate this idea that you're bringing forward. I think it's so important, this idea of the context and what is appropriate. And using these lenses and using this very large toolkit and all these different perspectives and ability to take these different perspectives, I believe, and it's been my experience, that integrally informed consultants are able to help the clients answer the questions of what's really happening here and what's important and what's needed. And I feel like using an integral approach, we get more accurate answers to those questions and more comprehensive and more nuanced. And so I really appreciate you bringing that idea forward. Can you share a little bit about some of the more interesting contexts that you're working in? And I know that you're one of the most innovative practitioners that I know of applying these integral tools in new ways, in some cases that we haven't seen before. So can you give us some kind of some specific concrete examples of the type of work that you're finding interesting these days?
Sure. Thank you. I will. And if I may just say one more thing,
sure,
related to the previous point, and then I can share some examples of the work that I'm doing.
Sure.
One other way I noticed what's different, what I'm doing now than before, is that I now find it almost dissatisfying to do a training program. And, just, you know, that was always something that I hadn't a difficulty, but I just found the training context to be too limited, which is why I moved to organizational development. But now, having worked with Integral and the kind of work that I'm doing, I have to say no when somebody just wants a training program. So I think that's a big difference. Earlier on, 7-8 years ago, if somebody wanted a 3-day program, I might still do it. Even I might, introduce more ideas about how to sustain the development, but I would still do it. And now I find that I actually say no. And the other point about context that you said, I realized that as I'm doing the work, integral work, I realized that I go through several levels of integration when I'm working with a client, and that just came to me, and actually haven't, articulated it before. So one level of integration, the first level of integration is where I am today. So I'm meeting a new client and integrating my past experiences and the way I've used Integral, what we've, achieved, not achieved, what I've learned about myself through the process. That's the first level of integration. The second integration happens in the discovery process with the client. So as, whatever diagnostic or assessment I might do interviews, understand their context, that whole discovery process does something already to what I'm going to offer. There's another level of integration as I'm listening to what might be happening and what is needed. And then there's a third level of integration that happens when we begin to design the solution. I usually co-design it with the client. And as we're designing, new stuff comes up and we realize that, we have to adapt our original ideas to make it really useful. And then there's a fourth level of integration that happens when we're actually doing the work. We're delivering it, and we realize, that we have to make adjustments, we have to treat something differently, we have to accommodate a new situation or a new perspective that we, weren't aware of. And then there's a fifth level of integration that happens after the delivery, when you now realize, oh, if I had done that, or had we done it this way, or had we sequenced this a little bit differently, then we wouldn't have had to deal with what we're, experiencing now. So it's interesting so for me, all of that is being more integral, because there are so many levels of integration. And so now, as a result of the fifth level of integration with one client, when I get to my next client, that's my first level of integration that I carry into the new context.
Wow.
So I just realized that that's what is happening, and so I thought I should share that.
Your schema, your sort of database of experiences and how you make meaning, when you come across these different perspectives in terms of what's happening and what's important and what's needed, it almost like keeps integrating to become more and more complex, more and more condensed, from client to client. And I when you said you aren't so interested in doing training anymore, it doesn't hold your interest. And then you talked about these levels of integration of doing organizational development work, which is different than training. That was a subtle point, and tell me if this is right, that the training itself is a little bit more like one size fits all, and it has all kinds of assumptions in it that the context and these people and where they are and their worldviews and their stage of development and all the four quadrant affair, the systems and the culture and their interior individual development and the behavioral issues, there's just all these assumptions that, well, they need this training. Whereas the OD work, it doesn't begin with any of those assumptions. There's much more of an exploratory, and is that why you now prefer OD work than training? I just wanted to kind of tease that out so that I make sure that I was understanding you there.
That's one aspect of it, and I would say the main aspect, because you can do a lot of customized training,
right?
Which
true.
Not one size fits all. But I think there is some notion in the training paradigm that you've gone through training and now you're trained, and
right.
So that it's not a process over time.
Right.
That's the difference.
It's the seminar model versus the practice-based model. Is that what you're saying?
I would say that. Which doesn't mean it's not useful. It's definitely, it's a great experience. People learn a lot. But I think with a little bit more support as a process over time and as a practice,
yeah.
You can get the benefit of 80% more of what you learned in the seminar model, as opposed to losing almost, I would say, 80% of what you learned because of the lack of follow-up. So this is not efficient to me. It's in the long run, I just feel it costs too much.
I think you know, but I'm very resonant with that, and we feel the same way in our organization that if there's going to be any kind of seminar educational component, we're only interested in doing that if it sits into a long-term practice-oriented, deliberate practice, integral practice, you know, oriented sort of action learning and peer learning and practice programs, so that those ideas that can come across in a seminar format can be integrated and embodied over time through practice, so that you really go from it being an idea to it being behavioral. So I'm very resonant with you on that. Well, tell us a little bit about some of the interesting work you're doing on the ground with clients.
Yeah, sure. So I've been working with a major company in Brazil over the last 3 years, who are, as I mentioned, very integrally informed. So I've done several significant projects with them. One of them is using the developmental framework to design a new multi-level sales channel or a commercial structure. So they're a very large company. They have direct marketing network, which is just a mono level or one level. And there are a lot of other organizations that have multi-level channels across the world, but none of those are rooted in a comprehensive developmental model. They're all based on financial developmental models. So you sell more, you go up, you sell more, you go up, and you earn more. And that's basically the paradigm on which those multi-level models are built. And this client wanted to really build a developmentally informed model where they don't want just business and financial rules, but we've added two more components at the very high level, which are learning or self-development and transformation rules in order to go up, and also social contribution rules in order to go up. So it's truly an integral base to a sales structure, which is endlessly fascinating. So this required quite a bit of depth work. I used Suzanne as an advisor to the project. I used Robert Keegan as an advisor to the project. Sean Hargens has been an advisor and working in many more ways with the same client. And we married the Lovinger Cook Reuter levels with the Keegan orders of consciousness and came up with four tiers in the sales structure, which spans eight levels of positions, and now we are tailoring developmental programs to support people to move from one level of the sales channel to the other. And we're using a twin growth model that includes both growing up and waking up approaches.
Wow.
So the waking up approaches span all the levels, and the growing up approaches are targeted at each level based on our understanding of stage theory, but keeping very much the organizational context and the business needs in mind. So we are using stage theory as a heuristic with enough understanding about it to tailor the program, but not obviously to do it in a rigid way, because we're not going to be testing all these people. But from our understanding of stage theory, we know that at earlier stages there are some types of learning that would help people shift, and then at later stages there are some types of learning that will support movement from conventional to post-conventional. So we're using it both as a heuristic as well as with a deeper understanding of stage theory. So that's very exciting. It's been launched in one of their countries as I wouldn't call a pilot. I mean, they just implemented it, and now we're on the ground and working with the internal education team, helping them to understand the new channel model, understand developmental theory, and we're including polarities as a way to be more integral. So there's just a lot of different components in that. It's very exciting to have the client learn through the process, begin to apply it to themselves as individuals, and most importantly, I think, learn to hold the developmental model with some perspective and not, you know, not begin to label, not dishonor people at earlier stages or at earlier levels in the structure. So there's a lot of work that went into first orienting the internal client to really see how to best hold the model in a way that would be useful and would get them the business results that they are looking for. So that's huge. It's one of their biggest, it's their most innovative project right now, and they're doing a bunch of innovative projects, all of them using Integral. They now have integrality as a value in their company.
Wow.
And so it's, I just feel so privileged that I was, I co-designed, I conceptualized, you know, with the internal project leader. There are several people involved, and then I had great advisors to look at the material to inform me so that I could integrate, you know, all of their perspectives. So that's very exciting.
Yeah, wow. I'd like to, if we could, just unpack this just a little bit more. First, wow, thank you for leading in this way. This sounds like one of the more innovative applications of developmental theory and integral approaches I've heard recently, and I'm really excited. I want to drill down a little bit for folks that are kind of, you know, real experienced with integral OD. I think, you know, what you described probably is very clear. For folks that have less experience with applied integral theory, it might be less clear. So let's just back up a little bit. And you said a couple things. I want us to define a couple terms and just drill down a little bit, because it's so groundbreaking and so relevant and can inform many people's work. So you said that you're using ego development, Suzanne's framework, and Robert Keegan's framework of how people mature over time psychologically and in terms of consciousness complexity. And then you said that you're tying that to the development of the salespeople to go from one level of the organization to the next. And then you mentioned something really interesting too. You said you're blending growing up with waking up. And the way that I interpret that, and I want to check in with you and see if my interpretation is how you're thinking of it, and you can add some additional nuance or correct me, that certainly growing up sounds like, you know, going through various stages of, you know, that we know very well now, structural stages of how minds are structured through various levels of psychological maturity or ego development, as it's sometimes called, or consciousness complexity development. But then you also mentioned, in addition to growing up, waking up. Is that what you said? Waking up, I believe.
Yes.
And so
yes.
To me, that sounds like instead of stages, parentheses, structures, there you're dealing with states, so perhaps mm-hmm. state realization, even state training, which, you know, we have a little bit of history in the West, but also in the East and some of the more ancient traditions, you have that. So just unpack that a little bit, stages versus states, growing up versus waking up, and then how do you introduce that in a corporate setting? So just can we drill down a little bit into that?
Sure. Well, first, how we introduce that in the corporate setting is actually in the design of the experiences that we offer to the employees or the associates. So the employees and associates don't get those terms, but the designers
right.
do.
Okay.
So the stage theory of psychological or personality development says that all human beings evolve from earlier stages of maturity to later stages of maturity. And all of us, even without knowing anything about stage theory, know from our experience that we are interacting, you know, sometimes with people who are more mature than other people who seem to be less mature. And so these stages have been defined based on ego development theory that uses a particular approach to measuring that development, and that is through language. So it is, you know, the caveat is that it's using a specific lens, and there could be many other lenses to look at development, but this is one lens. So growing up means maturing through these different stages. The waking up has really, oh well, just going back, so everybody goes through all the stages. You can't skip a stage, and it is hierarchical and developmental. States, on the other hand, are more can be seen as experiences that expand our, beyond our sense of ourselves, to put it very simply. And you can have state experiences at any stage of psychological development. So you can be earlier on the maturity scale or later on the maturity scale and have state experiences all the way through. And they both, so they both are important aspects of expanding our consciousness, but they are different. And so, I mean, you know, great Ken, you know, this is such a beautiful and simple framing that gives us a direction on how to design experiences to support people's development. So doing one or the other is not enough. And it's a great, it's the greatest polarity I can think of growing up and waking up to support transformation. And the other polarity, of course, I have to say, because I have Suzanne's voice in my head, which is, you know, a transformation is not mandatory or not an assumption. Transformation and being exactly where you are in, with the perfection of everything you are is another great polarity. I have to say that.
Yeah.
So going to growing up and waking up, Suzanne, so growing up is really about more mature ways of being, and it involves developing one's sense of self and reality to embrace broader and deeper understandings of oneself and the world. And it can they can be facilitated by various tools and processes. And a lot of work that's going on in the training and development field is all about growing up. Some of them address horizontal growing up, which is you learn more skills and
right.
techniques and tools, but you are, you know, your stage of meaning-making and how you see the world is you're at the same stage.
Right.
And then there are some that are particularly supportive of vertical development, where it not you not only add new skills and tools, but it changes fundamentally something in the way you see the world, the way you see yourself, and you, in a way, transcend an earlier way of being and include a new way of being. So some examples of the growing up experiences would be, you know, feedback processes. It's such a powerful way, so whether it's self-assessment, a 360-degree assessment, or peer feedback, or one-on-one feedback, you know, just feedback processes, building new skills, you know, soft skills, or soft and hard skills, or something that appears to be ambiguous, to really go deep into it and begin to understand, you know, the coordinates of something that seems to be so vague. For example, ego 40 years ago, you know, did not have the structure that we now have to understand ego and the different, you know, labels or meanings we give to the word ego. And definitely there was no measurement earlier, but now we can even say that we measure ego development. So teamwork and collaborative tools, self-management, project work, action learning, all of these would be growing up mechanisms or tools. Waking up, I would say, you know, are those experiences that expand the consciousness. And so the intention is to raise the state, to energize and to open new ways of feeling and being. And both growing up and waking up experiences can help you shift to a new stage of development. So the waking up experiences touch the universal human, you know, what's beyond human, it's what's transpersonal, and it can be an expanding experience. And the way we've positioned it with the client is free of any spiritual or religious you know, connotations, if you will.
Right.
So we have five or six categories. So we have mind-body practices. And, of course, we borrow from the wisdom traditions. We borrow from, you know, Western psychotherapeutic work, from other fields. But the mind-body practices are, you know, one category. And then we have affirmations. So affirmations can be so powerful, and you can use poetry, you can use different kinds of affirmations to transcend, you know, one's limited way of thinking and being. Then that's one category. And then we have inspiration as another category. So you and I both know that you see, you see something. I just recently saw this 2.5-minute clip of one of the CNN heroes from India who was working at a 5-star hotel and, you know, serving grand food to wealthy people, and one day saw an old man on the street, you know, who was a beggar and had no food, and it just changed everything for him. He asked himself why he was doing what he was doing, quit his job, and now it just feeds people on the street. He has a little kitchen. He has a few helpers. They cook, and they take food every day to the streets and just feed people. Mm-hmm. And that's so inspiring. I've been thinking about it every day since I've been seeing it. And so that kind of inspiration takes us beyond ourselves and makes us, wakes us up in some ways. And so the key about, waking up experiences is how sustained are these waking up experiences, because they can be temporary. You just wake up a little bit and then you move on. It reminds me of one of my favorite quotes from Churchill, which is, I'm not saying this accurately, but men often stumble upon the truth and then get up and walk off as if nothing happened, I had to say that. That's one of my favorite quotes. And then another category is aesthetic experiences. So artistic work, artistic expressions of all kinds, learning new ways to, physically embody beauty. That's another category. And then even finding the wellsprings of creativity in oneself, no matter what stage you're at, can be waking up. And then psychodynamic work, voice dialogue, big mind, which is almost trans religion, conventional ways of looking at waking up. So those are the five categories. So we're designing for every experience that the associate has in this company at a new stage of the sales, new level of the sales structure, they will actually get all of these waking up experiences designed by the training team to help them energize and, begin to glimpse a reality beyond themselves. And then there are supportive growth experiences, the assessment, the feedback, which is more about psychological growth. And so we hope that these opportunities of growing up and waking up will, over time, raise the whole system, while being very clear that this is just one dimension of each associate's life, and whether they actually move or not is dependent upon 100 other things: their life circumstance, what they want out of life, what stage they are at, what their goals are, et cetera, so we're not claiming that we're going to transform this whole community at the different stages, but we're offering a developmentally rich environment.
Right.
And creating more chances for accidents, learning accidents to happen.
Right. Right. Let me ask you a follow-up question. So for those folks that have studied, the stage development frameworks that you've talked about, Suzanne Cook-Reuters and Robert Keegan and all the many others, and Ken Wilber has obviously published many, and this idea of level or stage of psychological development is very concrete, and it's not subjective at all. But for folks that haven't had the benefit of studying some of those things, this idea of development, psychological development, becoming more psychologically mature, particularly people that have maybe an educational background in pluralism or more of a pluralistic worldview, might say, well, that's somewhat subjective. And so my question is, what would it look like on the ground with these salespeople for those folks that are at earlier stages of psychological maturity versus those that are at later stages of psychological maturity, and in the system that y'all have designed, literally at later stages in the organizational structure? And let me just, if I could, add one more thing about that before you answer, which is to say that there's the stage of the person's psychological maturity, their structures, you know, how they think. But then a lot of our colleagues have been working in this area of task complexity, which is to say, how complex is the task itself? You know, leading a sales call versus managing an international sales force with, you know, dozens of sales managers reporting to you is probably a different level of difficulty or complexity of the task itself. And so I sometimes think about stages of psychological maturity also as stages of ability. It's like the person's internal capacity to engage more increasingly complex tasks in the world. So can you illustrate an earlier stage sales team member versus a later stage sales team member? What's the difference in what they are able to do and how they relate with others, how they manage, and so on?
Sure. And before I go there, I just want to say that from an ego development perspective, we see task complexity or just cognitive ability, you know, to handle more cognitive complexity as one of the dimensions of meaning-making. And one of the dimensions, and a core one, I mean, almost like a prerequisite in some ways, because as, you know, Ken talks about the cognitive line being the leading line. But there are, you know, but just to look at it from a cognitive angle perspective, it's also, I feel, not accounting for the other dimensions that we look at. We look at least 11 dimensions. And this whole, a person is at a particular stage is a bit misleading because, a person is always at a, you know, over a spectrum. And so out of these 11 or 12 dimensions, you may hit 4 or 5 and feel that, you know, you're at a particular stage, but since you haven't quite integrated 2 or 3 others, you may not be operating at that stage a lot of the time. And so there's just there are many caveats around that.
Sure.
We have not yet separated out, you know, what are the specific tasks that would require more complexity, but we have a general idea about how the stages would move. And I'm glad you brought this point up because it's been something that I've wanted to work a little bit more on, and my client is ahead of me because they're working with Elliot Jacques' work levels. And so they've also done a little project where they looked at people who've mapped on the ego development framework, who have been, you know, got their profiles, people who've used the work levels. And I've seen those initial results, and there's some interesting, just a couple of things that jumped out. There are some people that showed, quote unquote, high on work level, not so high on ego development, and vice versa, but that was a small percentage. The client is looking at not just ego development, but also looking at other frameworks. Work levels look at complexity of task and role. Of course, they've applied this to a different community than the one that we are talking about right here. We're talking about the sales channel.
Right.
But so just a couple of examples at earlier stages. At the earlier stage, the salesperson is expected to just focus on getting their material reward, you know, to sell, understand the product, get their material reward.
Right.
At the next level, they are expected to understand more about the company as a, you know, as the context. And so this would be the conformist or the glue or the diplomat stage, where the expectation is that they understand what are the norms, what's the culture, what are the values. The rules, following process, maintaining standards. At the next stage, which is the stage in between blue and orange, which is not defined in spiral dynamics, but is defined in very, very specifically in the ego development framework.
The expert
is, is really gaining mastery of their work itself, gaining proficiency, and bringing a scientific orientation. So if they're learning about, a particular product, then becoming an expert on that product and understanding how that relates to, how that compares to the, competitor's product, What are the skills of business, knowing the best practices, and continuous improvement, even the notion of continuous improvement and improving quality of one's work would be at that stage. At the next stage, which is the self-authoring stage, it's more leading other team members, learning about collaboration, because
right.
It's hard for the previous stage to really collaborate.
Right.
Sharing information in a way that supports the whole system, you know, continuous learning, mastering individual and group communication, leading other leaders, that would be sort of the frame. And then at the next stage, which would be post-conventional, is more providing inspiration, being a catalyst, you know, creating the desire for people to invest in sustainable change, energize the system. So that's very, very broadly. And then for each of these, we've also talked about what kind of leadership would be required to support that stage. So you need, for example, leaders that are more directive at earlier stages because people are looking for direction. And then you want leaders that are more allowing for autonomy at later stages because at later stages people need more autonomy.
That's right.
While not limiting ourselves to fixing people, because even within the earlier stages you might have a lot of some people who actually want more freedom than others. And so we really want leaders to be able to offer both, but to also understand primarily where their stance should be. So we've described the leadership stance at each stage, and we've also described the key messages. You know, what are the organizational messages to each level? And so we've got some like mottos, you know, that would anchor each stage. So there's a fair amount of detailed work that's been done. And since they've just launched, we're really working at first two or three levels right now, and we are laying the road as we walk on it. So next year, we will be working a bit more at the later stages, at which point I think we would start working with more of the complex tasks you talked about. And I plan to, you know, understand LAS better this year. I've been wanting to do it for the last 2-3 years. I've been in touch with Zach, but haven't actually completed that. So over the next year, I will be better informed also so that I can see how we could bring that into this work.
Wow. I'm so excited about learning more of all the things you talked about. They all sound very interesting to me and probably a lot of our listeners. And the two that I'm just itching to hear about, but we're out of time today, is the leadership messages and the leadership stance.
Mm-hmm.
For the different approaches to leadership that are most appropriate in different places in this organization, at different structures, and according to different people's sort of stage of where they are and how they see the world and their worldview and all of that. So I am going to be taking copious notes during your presentation if you cover that, and look to hear more about that. And we're out of time today, but I just want to thank you so much for this innovative work that you're doing. And then also thank you for, like, really teasing apart some of these very important and slightly nuanced concepts and what they look like on the ground, and then also the really terrific kind of real-world concrete examples, which I think are very helpful for our listeners maybe that aren't as involved in exactly the type of work that you and I do. So, Bina, so thank you so much. It's great talking to you today.
Hey, thanks so much. It's great to, you know, have this opportunity to share some of what I've done. And I didn't imagine we would go as deep as we did in this particular project. There are a couple of other things we're doing at the same time that are truly phenomenal, like, you know, redefining high potential and calling it high integral potential and really describing what that might mean, and using polarities to create a more integral culture. So I look for other opportunities to share some of that work.
Well, let's definitely plan on bringing those out at the conference itself, because those are just as important. I agree. And mm-hmm. really looking forward to talking to you in the weeks ahead at the conference. So thank you, Bina. Thanks again.
Thank you very much. And congratulations on just putting together this whole initiative. I think it's great that we have this platform. So appreciate it a lot.
Well, on behalf of the whole large volunteer team that's making this happen, you're very welcome. And speaking for them and myself, it's absolutely a labor of love.
Yes, I can say that. Thank you.
You're welcome.